This is Jake Rosen. I'm here with my son David, and we're talking about politics. Actually, we're arguing about politics. Well, sometimes we're talking, sometimes we're arguing. Why don't you join us? David, I've had some peculiar conversations with people younger than me, maybe your age. And I say to them, what happens if Trump wins? What's going to happen then? And they look at me like I'm nuts because, of course, they're not Trump supporters. And they get very annoyed. And they said, well, what do you mean? I said, well, the Republicans are now saying that if Hillary gets elected, they think that they can stall acting on any of her Supreme Court appointments for 4 years. And they look at me and they say, like, never occurred to them that they could do that.
Well, that's not what the Supreme, that's not what the Senate is supposed to do. That's an act of, you know, sedition.
Well, so, yes, not supposed to do. What do you mean, not supposed to do? What prevents them from doing it? What would, supposing they
did
it?
Well, actions would arise if they did that. I mean, there would be, after a certain point, you'd have lots of protests. After a certain point, you'd have more divisiveness. I mean, after a certain point, you'd have, you know, usually what happens after a presidential election is that in the first 6 months, the president has a platform and usually is able to pass some legislation.
Jason Chafee says that he's already got a raft of things to investigate, that he's going to start these investigations before she even gets inaugurated.
But that's true, but that's, you know, one person. And what do we care?
He's the chairman of the committee in the House and with internal investigations.
I don't care if it's Silver Surfer. You know, it doesn't matter. They're all running for, you know, election, and they're all trying to pander to their base.
So you don't think you have to make a plan for what would happen?
But that's two different things, Dad. You said, what happens if Trump wins? And then you said, if Hillary wins, blah, blah, blah. Well, is it what happens if Trump wins or what happens if Hillary wins?
Both.
What happens if Hillary wins? It depends on how Hillary wins. Some forecasts show Donald Trump losing by so much that the Democrats will regain the Senate and possibly regain the House. Some forecasts show Hillary Clinton, you know, winning in a very small margin, which would maintain the Senate. But it would seem like the Senate would tilt to the Dems. So, and certainly the electorate will tilt towards the Dems. So there will be pressure on people in certain states, especially states where people, where the senators denounced Trump, you know, people who are more centrist, people who have, you know, I'm looking at the New York Times and it says, how large is the divide between red and blue? Half of all voters in the nation live in a county that was won in a landslide. So many people are surrounded by people like them. That's true. And when these shills that we call politicians are speaking, which means they're lying, that means that they're pandering.
I know the story. How do you know if a politician is lying? If his lips are moving, right?
Right. So who cares what they mean? They said this. They said they're going to block that. John McCain said it. But that's not what – they're going to make deals. That's what I think. But let's go to your point. What if Hillary wins, and what if there's an obstructionist legislation? What difference – how would that be different than what we have now?
All right. So – but that's her whole point. She can govern. She can govern. That's how she beat Bernie Sanders.
But you attack her on this point that she can govern, but how – but why is she ignoring the obstructionist legislature? I mean, look, I don't know. But what's the alternative, Dad, that you let them win?
No.
We repeal Roe v. Wade?
No.
We go to constant war? That's your platform? That's Jason Chaffetz's platform.
That is Jason Chaffetz's platform. That's also
don't
Donald Trump's platform.
That?
No, I don't support that. What I support is not is being unprepared. I support always having a fallback plan, a plan B. A plan B in case Trump wins, a plan B in case Hillary wins. I don't see that there's a plan B by anybody. I talked to one guy, very smart fellow. He said he's starting the September 9th movement because no matter who wins on September 8th, something has to be organized on September 9th. That seemed to me to be very sensible. But I don't
see too many people thinking that. Well, it would be sensible if it was November 9th.
I mean, November 9th. You're right. It would be sensible, yes. And that's what I meant. And then there you go. That's a plan B. When a person misstates something, the plan B is to state it correctly. Right. So.
All right. Well, I don't see the big difference between you, Jake, and me, David, is that you hear one person say one thing like Jason Chaffetz or John McCain, and then you say, oh, that's it. That's it. We figured it out. This is it. This is it. Because whatever you say, you believe these people. You think that what they say matters.
Well, Jason Chaffetz, by the
way. Oh, yes. He's a senator.
No, he's not. He's a congressman, but he heads a committee. He heads a committee. He has the opportunity to do what he says he's going to do. What?
He probably sleeps with his sister.
Even if he does, he can still organize these committees and these hearings and cause trouble. Listen, David Vitta, the senator from Louisiana, was a thoroughly disreputable, immoral person who kept getting arrested being with prostitutes. But he still was the senator from Louisiana, and he still passed on legislation, and he caused a lot of trouble.
Don't underestimate Louisiana. In Louisiana, prostitutes are a large union.
I know that in Louisiana, there was a campaign in which one candidate said, vote for the crook. He was the crook. And he was, in fact, better than the guy he was running against. But
That's like our election. Hillary Clinton's a crook, and she's better than the person she's running against.
Why is she a crook? I've never understood. What makes her a crook?
To your point. Well, there's so many people who say Hillary Clinton is the most corrupt person in history, and then that's really permeated and gotten through, except for one small problem. I mean, if you read about what this guy Doug Band did, which was monetizing access, that is a smoking gun. He did. He worked in the Clinton Global Initiative to monetize access, or at least give the presentation that he was monetizing access to the State Department, according to news reports. I mean, that's what they say. Doug Band.
Doug Band is not Hillary Clinton. That's even a different name. In fact, it's two different names. What they haven't said is that
she was married to Hillary Clinton.
Listen, I don't know of a single significant politician since Washington against whom it hasn't been said he's corrupt or she's corrupt. Well, mostly it was he's corrupt, except maybe for Abe Lincoln. But Abe Lincoln was called worse than corrupt. He was called, a walking orangutan.
And he was killed.
And he was killed. That's true.
That's the price of not being corrupt, being killed.
That may be. But the point is, let's assume they were all corrupt.
Well, that's my point to my friends. They say, what side are you on, David? Are you a liberal? You're a conservative? You're a small business owner? What are you? What side are you on? I say, you know what? I just don't have illusions. I don't have illusions.
So if you don't have illusions, what are you getting all upset about Doug Band? Doug Band did what Doug Band did.
Well, because there are people that are good people who are so behind Hillary Clinton, and they just can't swallow, like you said, any idea that, first of all, that Hillary could lose, but second of all, that there's any merits to the Trump supporters. And I think you and I on the show have talked about before, there is a narrative that a reasonable person, maybe less politically informed, could have, which is that they shouldn't be these dynastic political families. It just shouldn't happen. That shouldn't be our country.
That shouldn't be, but that's not the choice that we have right now. In fact, if you talk about dynastic families, you got the Trump promises to install his family. Look who he's got around him, his sons and his sons-in-law.
Can I've read his books and he says that, but to be as explicit as possible about it, what is his youngest son's name?
Schmuck?
Baron Trump.
Yeah, but he's 8 years old. A baron, well, yes, exactly.
Get it. Baron Trump. His name is Baron Trump.
All right. So Baron von Trump.
Baron isn't Mark.
No. Baron is a baron. On the other hand, he didn't name him Earl. He didn't name him Prince.
But you know there was a list.
But there's humility. There's humility. He chose a low-ranking order.
Trump or Baron Trump. I mean, if I had those three choices, I probably would have took Baron also. Plus, Melania. Now, to change subjects for a second, Melania Trump gave a speech yesterday, and I saw it. And she talked about...
Did she actually write it, or was she reciting something that
she was clearly reciting it. that's not the point. She was very powerful. I mean, I could see her, if she could have done more of this, she could have been a more effective surrogate.
If she could have done more of this, she wouldn't have been married to Donald Trump. He's not interested in women like that. He's interested in women who are good-looking baubles.
Well, maybe. I mean, Ivanka Trump ran the Plaza Hotel.
Until she ran it so well that he got rid of her.
Well, that's what he said. He didn't like having to talk about work with her.
Yeah, plus she was making a great success of it. There's an interesting story. These people who talk about how Donald Trump is a wonderful businessman, some accountant wrote a story in the New York Times the Friday before the election, picking apart the tax return that was released for his Doral Country Club, from which he claimed he had $50 million in revenue. It turned out it was right. He did have $50 million in revenue, but he didn't report the expenses. And when you take off the expenses, he had a $2.5 million loss. Some businessman. I'm talking cash flow loss, not depreciation. Real loss, money out.
I hear you.
He's an incompetent businessman. So if he would get a good woman in there, a smart woman who could do things, she wouldn't make a loss, and he'd fire her like he did.
So back to the White House or, you know, the Capitol. What I mean, you know, there are some laws that do need to be passed. First of all, the health care reform law, as it's suffered from, you know, defunding on the exchange level of the losses, which has led to the spike in premiums.
Yeah, which is,
you know,
completely caused by Marco Rubio and the Republicans, because but do you think that the Republicans are going to undo the law that they passed in order to defund Obamacare? They passed it in order to defund Obamacare. Now it works. It makes the premiums go sky high. For ordinary people don't realize that the only reason this has happened is because the Republicans refused to process the subsidies that the law was premised on. Now they have to pay high.
Which Hillary Clinton has never mentioned.
No, I don't say she's mentioned it. I understand she hasn't mentioned it. But somebody's got to mention it.
But why hasn't she mentioned it?
Because she's a terrible politician.
Or Obama hasn't even mentioned it.
Because they keep thinking they're going to get along with some group of Republicans. Don't forget, with the Obama-Clinton group, you're dealing with a right-wing Democratic Party group, not a left-wing Democratic Party group. A right-wing Democratic Party group wants to get along and thinks it can get along with some layer of Republicans. Well, you can't attack them then. But it was those very Republicans, for example, in this case with Obamacare, that defunded Obamacare through a bill that Marco Rubio introduced that the Republicans pushed through the Congress as a rider to another bill that the president signed.
But why are the Republicans against Obamacare?
They're against all government medicine. They've always been against it.
I don't agree.
Well, you may not agree, but that's history. They were against Medicare to begin with.
They're against it on a philosophical level, sure.
Yeah.
But I think they're also against it because it was his platform.
It's true that they're against it because Obama supported it, where previously they themselves had supported it because it was Mitt Romney's proposal. But the history of healthcare legislation in America is that the Republicans have always opposed government healthcare. They called it from the beginning. Ronald Reagan called it the beginning of the communist state.
Well, those same enlightened minds back in the times of the founders and Melania said, we're going to have a leader who supports our Constitution. Well, at the time of the founders, we know that the right wing, if you will, was against having things like a standing army. When they were against having the assumption of the state debt by the national treasury.
Yeah, but don't forget in the 18th century, the right wing was against the national government. They didn't support that. That's what defined the right wing in that time. So naturally, they didn't want anything that led to the development of a national government, a national bank.
That's right. And this was a time where, you know, 95% of people in America were agrarian people.
Yeah, that's right.
With land.
That's right. So I'm not exactly sure I understand your the point that you're making, because this right wing is not descended from that right wing. This right wing is a capitalist right wing. That right wing was an aristocratic right wing, a landowning right wing. Two different social groups.
So we're both saying the same thing, which is that the only way to work with to enact legislation is to defeat them.
Well, it looks that way. You certainly can't work with them, no matter what Mrs. Clinton says.
But when did she say she was going to work with them?
She said it from the beginning. Her campaign against Bernie.
No, you're saying she said that.
Don't you recall that she kept saying, I'm a progressive who can get things done? That was what she attacked Bernie for.
The context of her saying that was that Bernie Sanders can't find consensus with a hyper-liberal platform.
How can she? With whatever platform. Here's Obama, who took a Republican program.
That's not the point. That's not the point. You're attacking her for saying that she's trying to make deals.
I'm attacking her for saying that she can make deals when the evidence is she cannot.
What is she supposed to say? I can't make deals?
No, she's supposed to say, whether or not I can make this deal, this is what we have to try to do. If you know going in that no matter what you propose, they're going to oppose, why don't you propose something that's good?
Do you know who says things
people
like that?
People want to get things done.
Donald Trump. Donald Trump, to his credit, doesn't say, I'm going to make people reach across the aisle. He says, we're going to go for this thing, and we're going to make it, and we're going to, you know, create a groundswell for it.
What does his core supporters say? Good for him. He says what he believes. And what do the core supporters, all the people who say about Hillary Clinton? She'll say anything. Right? Right?
That's what they say.
Yeah. And that's why they oppose her. So what's the point of continuing to say it? Why don't you stand up for what you think is right? Now, maybe she does stand up for what she thinks is right, and what she thinks is right is terrible. All I'm saying is what she keeps saying is she'll be president because she can get things done. And
why is what she thinks is right is terrible?
I don't know that it's terrible. I'm just saying if you want to make the argument that she can only argue for what she thinks she can get done, I'm saying she can't get anything done. They're not going to let her get anything done. So why don't you at least stand up for what you
But that was true. If you look at the Civil Rights Act of 1968, which was passed into law by Lyndon Johnson, what you're saying was true about the Civil Rights Act up until the moment it wasn't. Am I wrong? I mean, you were there.
I was there. And what you have to remember is that at the time that the Civil Rights Act was passed, the country was in an uproar. The left wing was immensely strong.
The country was in an uproar.
Yes, there was a Vietnam. Not like today. At that time, there was a war going on. There was an enormous movement against the war. There was enormous possibilities that the Democrats would be swept aside by a left wing. The right wing wanted to do anything they could to prevent that. What they needed to do was strengthen the social safety net. What they had to do was increase rights for people so that they could say, don't go left. We're going to give it to you. Stick with us. That's what caused the civil rights law to be passed. We don't have such a situation right now. Unless you, I don't know where you live. Anywhere where I live.
Right. Well, that's interesting. And that's a story that repeats itself politically through history.
When the left is strong, progress is made. And progress is made not through the electoral process, but because the people who control the electoral process realize they can't continue because there's such turmoil in the social movements that if they want to stay in power, they've got to give something to the social movement. That's how the electoral process works.
Let's think about the Republicans. I mean, I saw in one of the major publications, Paul Ryan's going to step down. I mean, if we just forget that the Democrats exist
if he steps down, who takes his place?
I don't know. But
that's the point. Neither do they.
Hold on. But yes, they do. But what you're describing is the Republican primary and the Republican Party. And frankly, that system of picking the most popular person through a primary seems to have worked because they got the most competitive candidate.
You mean Trump?
I mean, people think he was the least competitive candidate, but actually he probably was the most competitive
candidate.
Well,
he was the most competitive candidate for the Republicans because he truly represented what the moderate Republicans, so-called, had turned their party into, a right-wing racist party. That's what they created. And that right-wing racist membership didn't want people who were no longer open racist. So they chose one who wasn't open racist, Donald Trump. So, yeah, he is their most effective candidate. That doesn't mean he's the most effective candidate for the general population. The Democrats happen to have chosen the possibly weakest candidate they could have chosen. So the Republicans have a relative advantage in that situation.
I don't think she's the weakest candidate they could have chosen.
They could have chosen a SEAL. That's true.
No, she has incredible groundswell amongst women.
All right. Well, she's got to have some strength. She's got to have some strength.
But that doesn't make her the weakest candidate they could have chosen. I mean, she's stronger than Martin O'Malley.
She's stronger than Martin O'Malley, but she's weaker than Bernie. She's weaker than Bernie. Bernie had the same strength. Maybe not quite as much strength, but almost the same strength among women. And he had immense strength in the young generation, which she doesn't have.
Do you think Bernie lost in a fair process?
I think there was unfairness involved in how the Democrats administered their primaries. And, of course, the main thing was that the Democrats had this super delegate situation, which stacked the deck against Bernie. But in general, I think that Bernie wouldn't have won. The majority voted against Bernie. Yeah. It might have been a smaller majority who voted against him, but I don't think he could have gotten the majority. Anyway, he didn't get the majority. But he was a stronger candidate. Because through the campaign, had he been the candidate, he'd have picked up the support that she has anyway, and he'd have had the support that she doesn't seem to be able to have ever gotten. Just like Obama had a coalition that she can't get. She can't pick up the African-American votes that Obama had. He had way many more than she. He picked up white votes that she can't get. Different politicians have different coalitions. Bernie's coalition would have been wider and deeper and would have spoken to the very things that Trump is able to mislead on. Trump wouldn't have been successful in that. But against Hillary, he is. So,
I do think it's scary. And I think when we look at what a post-election world looks like, that there is no leadership on climate change.
Not a word about climate change. There is no leadership. Right? Not a word in this campaign, except from Trump, who says he doesn't think it's true. And whose climate advisor, his environmental advisor, is a man who known to be opposed to the concept that climate change exists.
And Steve Bannon. End of story. Exactly. I mean,
so if you don't need a fallback plan in the face of that, I don't know when you would need a fallback plan.
Well, what happens if Trump wins? Trump has a 16% chance of winning. Well, if Trump wins, I think that, you know, a lot of people say they'll leave the country. Well, why should you have to leave your own country?
Well, it doesn't matter if you leave the country. Missiles go everywhere. The economic reach of the United States is worldwide. Where are you going to go? To the top of the Himalayas?
Well, I mean, if you live in a place like Switzerland or France, assuming you could do that, and you'd be in those countries.
You'd be in those countries, but you wouldn't be away from the influence of a United States government that could do God knows what.
Well, that's not true. I mean, when you live in France or Switzerland or England or Western Europe, you're not influenced by the United States government in that way.
What do you mean? You're not influenced. How can you say that?
They live their lives. They have their own lives. There are 550 billion people living in Europe. They don't listen to the President of the United States for how they should live their lives.
What if the President of the United States manages to convince the government, however he does so, to impede trade between the common market and America? What happens to the jobs, the livelihood, and the societies of those countries? What happens if the President of the United States, like Obama did, disrupts a country like Syria so that millions of refugees flood into Europe? What happens to Greece? What happens to the Balkan countries? What happens to Sweden? What happens to Germany when all of a sudden 5 million people show up?
Obama didn't create the Arab Spring.
He didn't create the Arab Spring, but he created the Syrian Civil War. He certainly
didn't. How did he create the Syrian Civil War?
Because he permitted the Saudis to arm the military groups that started the Civil War. Before the Saudis armed the groups and organized the groups with American money and American arms.
So one group gave arms to another group. Why is that a third
party's
fault?
Because it's American money. And because the Saudis have no independent ability to do anything that the United States says, you better not do this. It's just the way it works.
Why is that true?
Why is
it true? I don't accept that.
Because the United States controls their arsenal, controls what they can do with their guns because they sell them the guns. And when they sell them the guns, it's with the proviso that they can only use those guns, by which I mean planes, bombs, artillery, everything. They can only use that in ways that they clear in advance with the United States. That's the proviso. That's how it works. So when the Saudis do whatever they're doing, either they're tearing up the agreement or they've gotten the clearance. If they tear up the agreement, and the United States continues to fund them and give them these guns, the United States government is complicit in that. If they've gotten advance clearance, the United States is complicit in that, the United States government. The Saudis did this. They're the ones who started the military uprising. There was a civilian uprising, not a military uprising, against Assad. The civil war that exists today is wholly the doing of the right-wing Islamist forces who rule in Saudi Arabia. And the people who are fighting there are not even Arabs necessarily. They come from all over the Wahhabist movement. You know that.
But why is it? Why is President Obama the person
who's
at fault for that?
He's who's in charge of American foreign policy, not the Secretary of State.
This is a totally unfair characterization. Here's the facts: there is a place of political unrest. You have many autocratic regimes, and then you have climate change, which is making the agrarian people of those countries, like in Syria, besieged in a way that the heads of state in the urban centers don't want to deal with. So as a result of said drought, there was political unrest in a, you know, previously stable area, which escalated due to a region-wide conflagration, which was possibly created by destabilization started by, you know, the war in Iraq, which was not President Obama's doing. Now, you could say, well, it was the President of the United States doing, but it wasn't President Obama's doing. President Obama didn't create those conditions.
That's right. But what I'm saying is that even if everything you say is correct, when those protests began, which I agree started over water in northeast Syria, when those protests began and reached a certain level of intensity, the Saudis stepped in with military intervention, swept aside the civilian protesters, took over the protests, started a military conflict. The Americans had to have been involved because the Saudis don't have the ability to act independently. That's all. And that was Obama's foreign policy. That's what it was.
Why don't the Saudis have the ability to act independently? I mean, I know from real estate here in New York, they can buy buildings independently. They got a lot of money independently. Michael Moore said they own something like 10% of the United States real estate.
Real estate is not armies. Real estate is not armies.
What is it? But they do have tons of
arms.
They spend.
Do they have an armaments factory? One even? Do they have even one?
But once they bought them, they have them.
Once they bought them, they have them. But they have contracts. They buy them on. With a contract proviso that says you can't use these without my agreement. That's the proviso. If they want to keep buying them, they got to live up to that proviso. That's a constant proviso. That's the proviso that the same with all foreign aid. When the American government gives foreign aid, it's with the proviso that the money is spent in America. You take the money and don't spend it in America, you don't get the next tranche.
So wait. So we have a national legislature that is at its own neck, can't pass any law, and hates itself, and that's supposed to be the enforcing body of this policy?
I'll tell you the enforcing body of this conversation. It's over. This is interesting. Let you think about this. Next time we meet, we'll see whether we need a fallback or which fallback position we have to have, because one of these two is going to be president.
We'll see if we're in a civil war.
We will
Who knows?
Talk to you next week.
Bye.